No notes, Bibles open. To the book of 2 Chronicles. Part of this Dave Miller may have gone over, but we're going to focus tonight on looking at some background stuff with regard to the Ethiopians. And then we're going to go and look at a passage where another Ethiopian eunuch is talked about. In the book of 2 Chronicles, chapter 12, Jeroboam has become the king of the northern kingdom of Israel, 10 tribes following him. Rehoboam, after the death of his father, and because of his stubborn refusal to be a servant to the people, and instead stating that he would be harder on the people than his father ever was, his father was Solomon, then the people rebelled and 2 tribes were left with him. They are Judah and Benjamin. All of that changes. And the kingdom of Judah and the kingdom of Israel will become a mix of all of the tribes. And we'll see that unfold in this reading. There are 3 kings in succession. And those 3 kings, Rehoboam, Abijah, and Asa, are the son, the grandson, and the great-grandson of Solomon. And they are mixed. And we're going to look very quickly and very briefly at what occurs. If you turn to the book of 2 Chronicles, chapter 12, what leads us into chapter 12 is that Rehoboam, when he became king, forsook the law of the Lord. He no longer paid any attention to what God said. He didn't pay any attention to what God wanted him to do. And as a result of that, God sends an army from Egypt. And the leader of that army is Shishak. And he has different groups of people that are with him in the army that is coming against Rehoboam. And one of those groups of people, if you'll look in verse 3, is that it is the Ethiopians. When Shishak comes, verse 3 tells us he has 1,200 chariots. He has 60,000 horsemen. And the people who are with him are without number. And Rehoboam had an army, but it was nowhere near that size. Nowhere near that large. And these people are coming. A prophet comes to Rehoboam, and the prophet comes to Rehoboam and tells him, this is what the Lord says, this is in verse 5, because you have forsaken me, so also I have forsaken you to Shishak. When that was told to Rehoboam, the light bulbs went off, and recognition to what he had been doing came to him, and a change came. And the change is described in verse 6 and 7. So the princes of Israel and the king humbled themselves and they said, the Lord is righteous. The Lord will do what is right. And what God has planned for us is right because of what we've done. And the Lord is righteous. And that was what they stated. Verse 7 says, when the Lord saw how he humbled himself, he came back to the prophet and he said, I'm not going to destroy him, but I'm going to make him see what it's like to serve the kings of other countries. And Shishak, with all of his army, will not destroy Rehoboam, but he will be subject to him. And he will learn the difference between being subject to me and being subject to others. And so Shishak came to the temple. He took the treasury of the temple. He took the treasury of the king. And he took a number of other things. But he did not kill Rehoboam. And he did not overthrow them. Things changed quickly after Rehoboam. His son, by the name of Abijah, was very faithful to God. He was very faithful to God in everything that God would have him to do. He learned the lesson that his father learned late. But he learned it going in. And it's interesting to read what happens in chapter 13. Because Jeroboam, the king of Israel, decides to come against Abijah and to fight against him. And in chapter 13, the Bible will tell us that Abijah's army was 400,000 strong, and Jeroboam was coming against him with 800,000. And Abijah makes a little speech. And in essence, what he says to Jeroboam is this: you're coming to fight us? You have destroyed the priest. You have torn down everything in connection with God. You have built two golden calves and you call them your God. You no longer have priests that are from the tribe of Levi. You no longer have priests that are descendants of Aaron. You pay no attention to God. You pay no attention to what God says. And you're coming to fight us? We have the temple. We worship God. We have the priests that are descendants of Aaron. We are following the law. We are doing what God would have us to do. And you are coming to fight us? And the whole time that he's talking, Jeroboam has divided his men. And he sends part of them that are facing Abijah. And he sends the other part around behind him. So that he has engaged Abijah in an ambush. And he has him trapped. And Abijah and his men see the ambush as it unfolds. And when it happens, Abijah cries out for them to fight. And they cry to the Lord. And the Lord destroys 500,000 of the tribes of Israel on that day. And Abijah and his people win a great victory. And Abijah remains faithful to God for the rest of his life. And they've so defeated Jeroboam that Jeroboam and his army do not come again in the lifetime of Jeroboam to fight against the kingdom of Judah. And then the next king comes. So much good is said about Asa in chapter 14. So much good is said about him in chapter 14. Here's the warning that he receives in chapter 15. And then we see what happens to him in chapter 16. We'll summarize them real quick. Chapter 14 is again where the Ethiopians are mentioned. The Ethiopians are coming against Abijah. They are coming against Abijah with all of his army. And Abijah has an army that is, or rather Asa has an army that is nowhere near the size of what the king is coming with. It says in verse 8, Asa had an army of 300,000. That's 100,000 less than what his father had. And they were bearing large shields and spears. There were 300,000 from Judah and 280,000 from Benjamin. So total army was larger than his father's. But look at verse 9. The Ethiopian that's coming. He came out against them with an army of 1,000,000 men. New International Version says 1,000,000s. And he's coming out against them with 1,000,000 men and 300 chariots. And he came to Marishesh. He came close to Jerusalem. They drew up in battle formation. In verse 11, Asa prays this prayer: Lord, there's no one besides you to help in the battle between the powerful and those who have no strength. So help us, O Lord our God, for we trust in you and in your name have come against this multitude, O Lord. You are our God. Let no man prevail against you. So the Lord routed the Ethiopians. And that 1,000,000-man army, I probably wouldn't have said that if I thought about it a little bit, but that army of 1,000,000 that came out was routed and destroyed, and Asa was victorious. The prophet comes to him in chapter 15, Azariah, And when the prophet comes to Asa, he tells him, be faithful to God and he'll be faithful to you. Do the things that God would have you to do, and he will be faithful to you, and he will uphold you, and you will be strong, and you will have a mighty kingdom. Asa, in verse 8 of chapter 15, is so encouraged by those words. He gets rid of all the idols that remain, and he devotes himself completely and totally to God. And he even puts out a law that anyone that is unfaithful to God is to be put to death. And in verse 16, he even removes Maacah, the mother of King Asa, his grandmother. He removes her because she made an image or an Asherah of a god. And because she made this image to this god, he removed her from being queen. And that was his faithfulness and his dedication to God. Chapter 16, something happened. The new king of Israel, a man by the name of Baasha, decides that he wants to do battle against Judah. And he starts building up fortresses and taking small cities that lie between him and Judah and reinforcing them and planting his soldiers there to get ready to invade Judah. Asa sees all of this and he becomes afraid. And because he becomes afraid, he understands that Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, has been faithful and a friend of the king of Israel. And so he sends word to the king of Aram, don't be friends with him anymore. Instead, make a treaty with me. And if you'll make a treaty with me, I will give you gold and silver. And I will pay you if you will fight with me against Israel. And the king of Aram agreed to that and came down and drove the Israelite army out of those places that they were fortifying. And then the prophet comes to Asa. And when he comes to Asa, he says, was this army of Israel any larger than that army that came to you from the Ethiopians? Wasn't God able to deliver you against that mighty army of the Ethiopians? And now when it comes down to Israel, you don't ask God for help? Instead, you turn to Aram and you ask them for help? And you have let them go? And you have no idea what's going to come your way from the nation of Aram. And you have done wrong. And Asa does not humble himself. He evidently has become so full of pride that instead he gives orders for the prophet to be thrown into prison. And he does not humble himself. And he does not turn back to God. And near the end of his life, he has a disease that comes over his feet. And when he has this disease that comes over his feet, he never does ask God for help. Instead, he puts all of his trust in the physicians. And he dies. And eventually, he loses his life. I want you to read with me a verse. It's in chapter 16, and this is where all of this begins to take place. Verse 7, verse 8, and verse 9 is this prophet, seer, and prophet are the same thing, that comes to Asa, and this is what he says to him. But I told you this morning there was a key verse I wanted you to notice that ties in with that Ethiopian eunuch and ties in with us today. And that key verse is in this reading. Starting with verse 7, we'll read down to verse 9. At that time, Hanani, the seer, came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, because you have relied on the king of Aram and have not relied on the Lord your God, therefore the army of the king of Aram has escaped out of your hand. Were not the Ethiopians and Lubim an immense army with very many chariots and horsemen? Yet because you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into your hand. Verse 9 is that key verse. For the eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth, that he may strongly support those whose heart is completely his. You have acted foolishly in this. Indeed, from now on, you will surely have wars. God sees every heart in the world, and He knows every heart that belongs to Him. He knows every heart that is completely His. And the statement from the prophet of God is, every heart that is completely His, He moves strongly to support. And He moves strongly to help. Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 38. This great prophet is hated in his hometown, so much like Jesus is going to be. He has said things that people have been fighting against from the time he began to speak them. They've put him in prison, and now it's near to the time when Jerusalem is going to be destroyed, and he's still saying it. There's a group of men, and they are named in verse 38. If anyone would like to read them. Where's Bill? Is Bill here? Nope, Bill's not here. I don't see him. Huh? Well, we got a lot of Bills, don't we? We got a lot of them. Okay, never mind. it's a private joke. He would have been the only one to get it. Verse 38. Shephatiah, the son of Mattan, and Gedaliah, the son of Pashur, and Jukal, the son of Shelemiah, and Pashur, the son of Machijah, heard the words that Jeremiah was speaking to all the people. These are the words. Listen to what he's saying. You are about to be surrounded by the Babylonian army, with Nebuchadnezzar, the king, being the leader of that army. They've already been twice. They're about to come back the third time. Every time they've come, they've taken people. And the third time they come, there won't be anything left. They're about to come for the third time. And here's what Jeremiah is saying. He who stays in this city will die by the sword and by famine and by pestilence. And he who goes out to the Chaldeans will live and have his own life as booty and stay alive. Thus says the Lord, this city will certainly be given into the hand of the army of the king of Babylon, and he will capture it. So those officials went to the king and said, this man is a traitor. This man is discouraging all the soldiers that remain and every person that remains. And he is disheartening all of the people with the message that he's delivering, telling everybody to give up and surrender. And especially when you have a kingdom that is based on the great victories that we've looked at as we start back in 2 Chronicles from the beginning of this great kingdom. They see no way that they're going to be defeated and that God would allow such a thing to ever happen. Jeremiah is telling them it's going to happen. You are going to be defeated and you're going into captivity or you're going to be killed. So they come to the king and they say, we have got to stop him. We have got to put him to death. We have got to make sure that his words are never heard again. And we're about to see just how strong this king Zedekiah is. Zedekiah says to them, go do what you want to. The king can do nothing but stop you. And it gets worse. But that's what he says to them. So they go, and one of them has a cistern, a deep cistern. Not one that you just go down in a few steps. But they take Jeremiah and they lower him by ropes down into the cistern. But the cistern is dry, no water in it. Not completely dry, but no water in it. Because of the famine that they're under. And when Jeremiah is let go into the bottom of the cistern, he sinks into the mud. And that's where they leave him. And there's a man. We're introduced to him in verse 7. But Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, a eunuch, while he was in the king's palace, heard that they had put Jeremiah in the cistern. Now the king was sitting in the gate of Benjamin, and Ebed-Melech went out from the king's palace and spoke to the king, saying, "My lord the king, these men have acted wickedly in all that they have done to Jeremiah the prophet, whom they have cast into the cistern. And he will die right there because there's no food left. There's no bread to give him to eat. And he will die right there." Then the king commanded Ebed-Melech the Ethiopian, saying, "Take 30 men who were under your authority." This man's a leader. This man has a company of men that are under him. And he says, "You take 30 men that are under your authority, and you bring up Jeremiah the prophet from the cistern before he dies." So he goes to the storeroom, and he pulls out old clothes and old rags. And he brings those old clothes and those old rags, and he tosses them down the cistern to Jeremiah. And then they toss down a rope. And he tells Jeremiah to put the cloths, the clothing, underneath his arms, under his armpits, and to wrap himself with the rope, and they will pull him up. Evidently, they're so concerned about how fragile his skin is, having been in the mud, and how weak he is from the famine that's in the city, and how hard it's going to be to pull him up out of that mud that will hold on to him with all the suction that it can. And so those 30 men pull him up out of the mud. When they pull him up, King Zedekiah says, "I want to talk to you, Jeremiah." And when Jeremiah comes to the king says to him, "Tell me what I want to know. Answer the question that I have for you." Jeremiah says to the king, "If I answer the question, you'll kill me. And if I answer the question and you don't kill me, you won't do what I say. So why should I answer the question?" And the king said, "I will not kill you, and no one else will. So I want you to answer the question." And Jeremiah tells him, "If you will do this, when Nebuchadnezzar comes, if you will surrender to him, if you will go out and give yourself up to Nebuchadnezzar, you will not be killed and no one in your family will be killed. And you will be taken to Babylonia. You will be taken to the capital. And you will be able to live out your life and you will be safe." And King Zedekiah says, "I'm afraid of what the people who are already there will do to me. I am afraid of what the rest of the people of Judah will do." And Zedekiah said to him, or rather Jeremiah said to him, "They won't do anything to you. The promise from God is that you will be safe, and no one from Babylon will harm you, and you will not harm yourself. But you have to surrender to him. If you don't surrender to him, then you will die and your family will die and this city will be burned." Nebuchadnezzar comes and he never surrenders. He never gives up. As a matter of fact, when it's absolutely hopeless, he flees in order to try to get away from Nebuchadnezzar. They catch him and they bring him back, and then that's when they bring all of his sons in front of him. They kill every single one of them. They kill all of his officials in front of him, with him watching. And then they poke out his eyes so that he'll never see again. And that's the way that it ended with him. But there's something else. And this is in chapter 39. After it describes how Zedekiah is destroyed and all the things that happened to him, verse 15 of chapter 39. Now the word of the Lord had come to Jeremiah while he was confined in the court of the guardhouse, saying, "We're going back now. The end is over. But we're taken back by Jeremiah to something that happened after he was pulled out of the cistern and while he was in the guardhouse. Go and speak to Ebed-Melech the Ethiopian, saying, 'Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I'm about to bring my words on this city for disaster and not for prosperity. and they will take place before you on that day. But I will deliver you on that day, declares the Lord, and you will not be given into the hand of the men you dread. For I will certainly rescue you, and you will not fall by the sword, but you will have your own life as booty, because you have trusted in me, declares the Lord. That verse in chapter 16, verse 9, becomes so very special. God's eyes are open to every soul in the world, and He knows the hearts that are completely His. And He will be fast and strong to come to take care of them. Those are words we all need to hold to. It doesn't mean we'll always make it through everything we face. It doesn't mean that death will not come to us. But what we know as we have the rest of the Bible unfolded for us is if my heart belongs to God, death cannot harm me. And if my heart belongs to God, and I trust Him, and I listen to Him, not even death can do anything to harm me. And that's the promise from God all through all of this. And there are two Ethiopians who were eunuchs who fit that category. Read about one in Jeremiah 38 and 39. Read about the other in Acts chapter 8. And it needs to be what all of us strive to become. I'm going to sing our invitation song and give you an opportunity to become a Christian if you're ready. Give you an opportunity to come home to Christ if you need to. And we'll offer that invitation to you as we stand and as we sing.